Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to the FT Money Show from Investors Chronicle and FT Money.
Hello and welcome to the FT Money Show. In today's programme, summer is heating up savings rates again, putting a Thai hotel room in a self-invested pension, and the bad, and if you can believe it, good news on British Gas's 35% price hike. I'm Steve Lodge from FT Money, and I'll be giving you the lowdown on all of these money matters in downloadable form with the help of my colleagues from FT Money, Charlene Goff.
Hello.
And Elaine Moore.
Hello.
So, let's start with the money news. Savings competition normally tails off in the summer, but not this year. 1 year on from the credit crunch, and lenders are still struggling to raise wholesale funds. But that's great news for savers, who can now pick up a record 7.2% fixed rate and about 6.5% instant access. Charlene, we've also seen some fairly dire results announcements from the big banks this week. So, can we assume the credit crunch isn't letting up anytime soon?
I think that would be fair to say, Steve. Yes, the credit crunch is now approaching its one-year anniversary and things are still looking really tough out there for banks. Like you say, there's been some really disappointing profits announcements. HBOS, the owner of Halifax, and Lloyds both saw profits fall by almost three quarters.
That much?
This week. So for shareholders, you know, banks are still looking really unattractive. But the good news, like you say, is that they still are struggling to obtain funds in the wholesale market. They don't really want
to lend. To mortgage borrowers.
Yeah, and they don't want to really lend to each other. So they are still offering these sky-high rates for savers.
At a time when base is only 5%?
That's exactly right. So you can get sort of 2 percentage points over base from some of the very best savings accounts in the markets. The very top rates are reserved still for those people who can afford to lock money away for a year. If you can't do that, you're limited in the rate that you can achieve. But instant access accounts are also paying really high rates now, 6.5%.
But the flip side of this, presumably, is if this is the only way they're getting the money to lend out, is that mortgage borrowers are being stuffed mercilessly.
Well, you would think that, and that has been the case for most of this year, that mortgage rates have been really high as well. In recent weeks, they've actually started to edge down a little bit, and HBOS and Lloyds are two of the banks that have started to offer cheaper mortgage rates.
So, Elaine, the first-time buyer's perspective, good news for the likes of yourself?
Well, it sounds fantastic that mortgage rates are coming down, but it looks like the percentages are only very slight, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. I mean, it's a very incremental thing. I think the cheapest rates are still sort of 6.2, so still quite expensive. And I think we said before that those best rates are reserved for the people who have deposits of 25% or more.
And the flip side, correct if I'm wrong, I mean, is the banks are now saying they will improve their business by increasing margins. Now, correct if I'm wrong, that just means finding different ways of charging mortgage borrowers more rather than less.
I think the heavy write-downs that they've suffered in the first half of this year has made a number of the banks sit back and think, well, we can't afford to do cheap mortgage business anymore. We need to get our profit margins back. Mortgage rates might not come down much more, but hopefully the cost of obtaining their funds will come down. So banks should be able to get money a bit cheaper and keep mortgage rates where they are and increase their margins in that way.
And if those wholesale funding costs you refer to come down, of course, presumably that means less pressure to pay the high savings rates.
Yes, it would do.
So I guess savers should make summer hay while they can.
That's it. And lock in.
Indeed. And if you'd like to read FT Money's latest on savings rates, buy the Weekend FT or go online at ft.com/money. You can also send in your questions for us to answer by emailing us at ask.ftyourmoney@ft.com. And please feel free to say what you like and what you don't like about the programme. Still to come in the programme, the bad and, believe it or not, good news about British Gas's record price hike. But first, exotic holidays and pensions. Or at least an opportunity to put property, in this case a Thai hotel room, in your SIP. FT Money's Elaine Moore talked to Tim Moore, no relation, a partner of Thareps, about this unusual SIP investment idea.
Tim, if I was to invest in one of the Thai hotel rooms and put it into my SIP, what sort of returns could I expect to make from it?
Well, I think you could expect to make anything from sort of 8% up to our target return is 14%. But let me just sort of explain what it is and how it works. So Himapan Beach Samui is a buy-to-let hotel. The concept's very simple. What you do is you buy a hotel room and you share the room revenues with the hotel operator. The thing that really drives your yield is the occupancy of your hotel room. So the key is to make sure that you buy into a scheme which has a really clearly defined strategy for driving occupancy. And that's hopefully what we've got.
So you would expect that the hotel in Thailand will have a very high rate of occupancy. Why is that?
For a start, it's not just a hotel. We started from first principles here and we turned around and we said, how could we drive massive, massive occupancy? The whole strategy is based around location. So it's on Koh Samui, which is apparently has the highest concentration of 5- and 6-star hotel resorts in the world.
Is there such a thing as 6-star hotels?
I've stayed in a few. And then it's not just a hotel. What we're building there is a destination resort. What they deliver is everything that you could possibly want on a holiday.
So that sounds like a fantastic place to visit, but if I invested in this via my SIP, I'm not allowed to go there, am I?
No, but there are some advantages to not going there, obviously, because what we're offering is for the first 2 years you get a guaranteed 8% return on the overall cost of the investment. And then what happens is you then go into the rental pool. Now, if you buy it out of your SIP, you obviously have fewer days in the rental pool because you can spend up to 40 days in your apartment. However, obviously, if you invest in your SIP, you're not allowed to go. So that just means that your yield is higher.
And so apart from not being able to visit the hotel myself, if I invest in this via my SIP, there are other considerations as well, aren't there, to make sure that this remains a SIPable investment?
We've worked very closely with some sort of industry leaders and SIP providers such as sort of Dentons and Hornbuckle Mitchell. And one of the key things there, funnily enough, is the issue of kitchens. You're not allowed to have a kitchen. And that's because you're not allowed, you can only put commercial property in your SIP. And the definition of commercial property in this case is a suite that doesn't have a kitchen in it, so that you can't stay in it full time.
Investing in a hotel in Thailand sounds like a very exotic sort of asset class to have within a pension fund. What would you say to that?
I'd say a couple of things, really. I mean, one is it's a very tangible thing. So even if you can't go, even if you can't stay there because it's in your SIP, you can go there and you can have a look at it and you can touch it and you can feel it. Secondly, it's in Asia. Asia is a booming part of the world economy, and this is a very tangible way of getting a slice of that. And thirdly, well, you know, Samui has more visitors than the Algarve. You know, what you're actually investing in is a very well-established and growing tourist industry.
That was Tim Moore of Thareps talking about SIP investment into Thai hotel rooms. So, Elaine, is this just an opportunity for cheaper massages?
It certainly is not, Steve, and especially if you want to put an investment like this into your SIP, because one of the main requirements of commercial property investment in a SIP is that you cannot take advantage of this yourself.
What about the wider risks, then, of this sort of investment? I mean, should people really be putting their SIP money into not just a property, we all know where property is going at the moment, but a Thai hotel room?
I'm not quite sure what I'm investing in. It's something that advisors and SIP providers are talking about as well, because for pension investment, you want something that's long-term growth, and investing in a foreign property scheme doesn't sound like the safest sort of option, although we should say that this particular scheme is available through some very mainstream SIP providers, and the actual providers themselves are the ones who are really taking on the risk. They're the ones who purchase the property as trustees. So if it becomes clear that the property is not suitable for a SIP investment, they would incur the tax charges.
But presumably a large part of this return comes from actually getting guests into that hotel room.
It does. So you have to bank on the idea that that hotel will still attract guests. That's why hotel rooms are also quite an interesting investment and something that is maybe a good diversification inside a SIP, because unlike other forms of commercial property, you're relying on people going into the rooms. That's where the revenue comes from. So if you choose a good brand and a good location, people say that there aren't enough hotel rooms in the UK and the rest of the world, then you can make good profits from them.
And for Elaine's analysis of this opportunity, you can read her article in this weekend's FT Money. Finally, British Gas. This week saw the energy giant raise gas prices by a record 35%. This followed EDF Energy putting up gas bills by 22% and electricity by 17%. Elaine, I guess the bad news is pretty obvious here.
It doesn't look like the bad news is going to end anytime soon either. Mm. Of the big six, this is just two who have raised their prices. People say that the others are going to do it fairly soon as well. So people's weekly gas and electricity bills are going to keep on coming up.
But is there really any good news here? I mean, is it just that we're in August, it's summer, you don't need too much gas at the moment?
Coal chairs.
That's about it, isn't it? Well, there is some good news in terms of the deals that are left around at the moment, although the caveat is that you need to snap these up as soon as possible. The rise in prices by British Gas means that it's now the most expensive standard tariff around, but it actually offers an online deal that saves customers around £40 a month, which is quite a lot. There's also the possibility of capping your rates. And the thing to say about that is that the rates will look more expensive than standard rates now because they're pricing for the future.
Yeah.
But if you think that gas bills and electricity bills are going to keep going up, it's a good idea.
Presumably some of these rate deals are changing as well, so you've got to grab the
You've got
rates.
To grab them while you can. They're going all over the place. Apparently about 45% of switchers are now going on to capped rates because everyone's realising that the bills are just going up so much. So the providers are pulling them as quickly as they're offering them.
And Steve, do you think there's a real argument here for going green and trying to get your energy from alternative sources?
Well, I think there's a lot to be said for cold showers.
After the Thai massage.
rather less, perhaps, than for windmills. I mean, you often hear of these sort of green measures, don't you? And they say it's going to take 4,000 years to get your money back. So it might be all right for David Cameron, who is, you know...
It's actually about light bulbs. If you can change the light bulbs in your house to energy-efficient bulbs, you can save quite a lot of money on your bills.
And often you can pick these things up cheaply or even free now, can't you? They're no longer £4 a time and so on, and lots of companies are encouraging them, I think.
They are, and the government is as well. There are schemes around to reduce the price of the bulbs.
So not all bad news. And listeners can read Elaine's story on how to beat the gas price rises in this weekend's FT Money. So that's enough gas bagging for this week's FT Money Show. Do remember that you can email your views and your questions to ask.ftyourmoney@ft.com. And we'll be back next week with another financial lowdown in downloadable form. But until then, it's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from Charlene and Elaine.
Goodbye.